the country came in a very bad state to begin with in April 2023, dating back to October of 2021 when a coup occurred, removing the civilian government. That led to basically a shutdown of any development assistance that was being given to the country. And all that was left was the humanitarian response throughout that period from October of 21 until April of last year. We saw an uptick in ethnic-based violence, as well as a major deterioration in the economy. So the 14th of April wasn't, a great day either, but it was nothing like what has happened since on the 15th of April, when fighting broke out between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces. We've seen the capital fall, a very unusual event in any conflict, and the displacement from the capital has been immense. Displacement overall in the country, now somewhere over 8 million people, almost 2 million of them have sought refuge in neighboring countries. Many of those who were displaced internally are now living with host communities in the east and the north of the country, which is slowly deteriorating the resilience of those communities. So not directly impacted by the fighting per se, but having to take on a bigger burden. We also see the infrastructure in those cities, including where I am here in Port Sudan, coming under immense strain from the rapid increase in population. Our biggest concerns are around the conflict areas in Khartoum itself, the Darfur states, which obviously have a very long history of conflict, and then the Kordofan states, as well as Jazeera State, which was a place of refuge for people from Khartoum. It's directly south of the capital, but that was taken by the RSF in December. And unfortunately, the response strategy at that time was to use large warehousing hubs, one of which was in Wad Madani, the capital of Jazeera State. We lost that. It was subsequently looted, despite assurances by the rapid support forces that it would be protected. And I'm afraid that's sort of the legacy here, is we have a lot of commitments made at a very high level, but that doesn't necessarily translate on the ground. We have recently received in the past 2 weeks two very worrying warnings, one an alert from the Famine Early Warning System of a potential famine in certain areas of the country, as well as from the global IPC food security experts, which basically encourages us to act now to stop a famine.
How do you manage to continue your work? Do you have an opportunity to communicate with both the government forces and the rapid support forces sides? How do you manage to keep the aid flowing, especially to those in biggest needs, like the IDPs, for instance, the internally displaced persons?
We are working in coordination with both sides, the access and civil military coordinations units. In my office are probably my busiest, and that's intended to do both cross-line movement of supplies and experts, as well as cross-border. We've been using a cross-border entry from Chad up until recently, when the government revoked permission to use that particular crossing and have indicated a different crossing which enters into territory they control. A major impediment, and in fact, the cross-line movements have been quite limited for the past months. We've seen more impediments, both in terms of physical security as well as bureaucratic impediments being imposed by the Sudanese authorities. We continue to face challenges to move about the country and to move supplies to assist people in need. We've also seen in recent months a total shutdown in the communications network within the country. Again, just about everything here is being pulled into the conflict, and this was another part of it. That prohibits Sudanese from talking to each other. Families are separated here, but also our ability to negotiate access. We had contacts all along the routes that we were using, and being able to communicate with checkpoints and with commanders in the field to inform them of movement of our supplies and personnel was essential, and that has been much, much, much more difficult since the telecommunication network was blacked out. We are seeing portions of it come back online, but it's a slow process. We face basically three challenges here. The number one is access. Number two are resources. We're just at about 6% of the $2.7 billion we requested for this year, and yet we're already one quarter of the way through the year. And then it's attention. Sudan is often referred to as a forgotten crisis, but I question how many knew about it to be able to forget about it.
When we're speaking about this forgotten crisis in figures, how many people are you targeting with your aid?
Overall, we estimate about 25 million people in the country are in need of humanitarian assistance. That's almost half the population. Of those, we're trying to target 14 million, and that's probably ambitious given the context we're working in. We have almost 18 million people with acute food insecurity, almost a million children who have severe malnutrition. So the numbers are just staggering when you look at them in abstract. What was a country with a lot of hope some years recently with the revolution and a new Sudan being born, and the result, unfortunately, is what we see today. There are human rights abuses. There are grave violations of children's rights. Sexual-based and gender-based violence is rampant and being used as a tool of war. We also have 19 million children who aren't in school. Of all the states in Sudan, only one state has its functional school system right now. We're not only seeing the sacrifice of the people of Sudan today, but potentially its future. Because if it continues in this way, and I've dealt with two famine prevention operations in my career in Somalia in 2017 and in 2022-23, both of those were successful. But I was never up against this sort of operating environment. And I don't know how we will be able to stop famine in certain areas, given the conflict dynamics, given the lack of access, and given the lack of attention by the international community on bringing it to an end.
Besides the 25 million in Sudan itself, there are many more influenced by that in the neighboring countries, especially in the situation when there are so many people who had to flee Sudan looking for some relative safety. What's the current state of affairs in the neighboring countries? What are the needs there?
You're talking about a refugee situation into countries that themselves are, not the most stable. They're dealing with their own political as well as security situations. Ethiopia, South Sudan, Chad, among them. The situation of refugees, as it's reported in eastern Chad, is quite horrific, and yet people are still leaving Sudan on a daily basis to seek assistance in Chad. And I think that tells you something about how bad things are in Darfur itself. Hundreds continue to move into South Sudan, which itself has a very large humanitarian problem. So the effect that this conflict could have on the region as a whole, the Horn of Africa, but then stretching into the Sahel is quite catastrophic.
What are the most pressing needs that the humanitarians face in Sudan? And what are, besides the political statements, are your expectations from Paris during this upcoming conference?
Unfortunately, this is the state of this war right now, is there's very little accountability and there's very little to minimal international pressure to make it stop. And that's our hope for Paris, is that finally those who are one facilitating this conflict or standing by and allowing it to happen will reverse those positions and step in and try to make the two sides come to the table and end the conflict. Yeah, number one on the list is to deal with the threat of famine. And we'll be launching a famine prevention plan in the lead up to Paris. We've been working on that for the past few weeks in anticipation of these warnings because we've seen the signs. So you're talking about food, you're talking about nutrition, but you can't save a child by simply giving them some supplemental feeding. They need to have health care, they need to have clean water, they need to have a place to sleep. And they need to have a protective environment. So across the board, the needs are high, but certainly those are the most pressing right now as we see it: food security, nutrition, health, and water and sanitation. There is a pledging conference. As I said, our funding right now is negligible. We are starting to curtail activities. Most of the rations that people receive from the likes of WFP are cut in half already. So we can't strip more off the bone to try and make this operation work. So without more resources, not only will we not be able to stop a famine, we're not going to be able to help basically anybody. And as I said, we need the international community to get off the sidelines and to engage the two parties and to bring them to the table, because this conflict is a nightmare for the Sudanese people that I don't think they ever imagined would be coming, but is now very much a reality. So the outlook is just getting worse and worse. And I said to a friend, they said, "How bad is it there?" I said, "It's very bad, but I don't think we're at the bottom." We're ready to act. As I said, the plan will be coming out. We have done this in other locations. We can do this here if we are given the resources required and the support required. We can avert the worst in Sudan, but we'll have to see whether those materialize.